Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We will be starting our program in 5 minutes. May we request everyone to enter the venue and please settle into your seats. To avoid program interruption, we would also like to request that everyone put their phones in silent mode. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michael Paulus. I'm from Citigroup, and I'm delighted to be here with you today for the Philippine Dialogue in Washington. Joining us today are the Philippine cabinet members and other senior economic officials who will share the latest developments in the Philippine economy this morning. The Philippine Dialogue has served as a venue for the Philippine government to provide the international business and financial communities with updates on the Philippine economic performance and investment opportunities. This is the second Philippine Dialogue that is being conducted here in Washington, D.C. We hope everyone is excited to learn more about the Philippine developments. But before we do, I'd like to first acknowledge a few of our friends and partners in making this possible. First, Banco Central ng Pilipinas and the Department of Finance, together with the Philippine Embassy in Washington. To our partner banks, namely Bank of America Securities, Citi, HSBC, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Standard Chartered Bank, and UBS. Thank you for your support. We also have a number of officials that I would like to acknowledge here before we begin today, specifically Speaker of the House of Representatives of the Philippines, Honorable Ferdinand Martin Romualdez, Majority Floor Leader Manuel Jose Dalipe, Deputy Speaker David Suarez, Representative Jose Aquino II, and finally, Philippine Ambassador to Japan, Milen Albano. Welcome. To officially start the program, may I call on the Ambassador of the Republic of the Philippines to the United States, His Excellency Jose Manuel Romualdez, to deliver opening remarks.
Thank you. Well, we'd like to welcome everyone and good morning to all of you. Welcome to the Philippine Dialogue here in Washington, D.C. This is probably our seventh Philippine Economic Dialogue that I have been privileged to attend. And it's always a pleasure to see many friends and partners on occasions such as this one to discuss candidly our mutual priorities regarding investment opportunities in the Philippines. Unlike the Philippine Economic Briefing that we have always held in the past, the Philippine Economic Managers, led by our Finance Secretary Ralph Recto, are holding today a dialogue for deeper and longer engagements. Before I continue, I'd like to once again, first and foremost, acknowledge the presence of our House Speaker, Martin Romualdez, who's here. He has been here for a week now to follow up on many of the conversations that we'd had with friends from the U.S. Congress, and he's continuing to have that interaction with them. Just to show you how important our relationship is with the United States, we're now dealing with the United States on all levels of our government and your government. So we're very pleased that he's here to support us in helping our very ambitious projects and our economic priorities. We also have, of course, our Budget Secretary Amina Pagdamanan, NEDA Secretary Arsenio Balisacan, and BSP Deputy Governor Francisco Daquila Jr., and our friend who is here for the trilateral agreement of meeting, our ambassador to Japan, Milen Albano. We are also joined today by Michael Ellum, the Chairman of the Board Sector of the Public Sector Banking, Global Banking and Marketing of HSBC, and Jay Collins, the Vice Chairman for Banking and Public Sector of Citi Seniors Client Group. Last week, as you probably know, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. met with President Joe Biden and Prime Minister Fumio Kishida for the first ever trilateral summit between the leaders of the Philippines, Japan, and the United States. The trilateral summit underscores the deepening relations and cooperation between the three countries in areas concerning challenges facing our national security and the greater region. But most importantly, our cooperation on economic security ensures greater resilience and more robust growth of our economies through concrete and defining actions. The outcomes of the trilateral summit are truly transformative. The PGI-Luzon corridor, launched at the summit, will connect strategic hubs in Subic, Clark, Manila, and Batangas through investments in critical infrastructure. These connections will serve as the lifeblood for the developing industries in the agro-business sector, clean energy, and semiconductor, and facilitate the movement of goods, services, and people. We intend to bring this level of investment to other areas of the Philippines, especially in the South and Mindanao. We will also revolutionize digital connectivity in the Philippines with the use of the Open RAN, ushering a digital landscape that is open and secure and ultimately accessible to all Filipinos in the entire archipelago. Investments in the Philippines' workforce will help prepare our engineers, scientists, policymakers, and other stakeholders in the industry for semiconductor and clean energy, including critical minerals. These are just a few of the economic priorities in that pipeline that we have in the Philippines we are undertaking. Quite recently, the first presidential trade and investment mission led by Commerce Secretary Gina Raimundo was held in Manila with over $1 billion of private sector investments announced at its conclusion, focusing on clean energy, digital transformation, telecommunications and logistics, and food security. The mission underscored our shared message to the private sector on the renewed direction of our economic ties. The Philippines will continue to push for the reauthorization of the Generalized System of Preference, or the GSP, including discussions on possible free trade agreement with the United States as we continue to pursue high standard, high quality economic cooperation and explore other forms of engagements with the United States, including sectoral agreements. To power our growing economy, the Philippines will continue to prioritize energy security, cognizant of its importance in the growing digital world of economy. To ensure that these commitments are fully realized, the Philippines has been undertaking reforms supported by our legislative, headed by Speaker Romualdez, supported by sound fiscal and monetary policies to create a more favorable investment environment. Our economic managers are here today to engage in productive conversations with the end goal of strengthening our trade and investment ties and deepening public sector collaboration. It has been nearly 2 years since President Marcos tasked his economic managers with the full support of the Philippine Congress to create an economic landscape that is open, transparent, connected, inclusive, and progressive. I invite all of you to discover the reforms we have been able to take in or put in place, including those forthcoming and the investment opportunities awaiting you in the Philippines. On that note, I wish to invite on stage a good of mine who is he's not only a good friend, but somebody that I truly admire because he's such a creative investment man, a seasoned legislator, but an economic strategist as well, Finance Secretary Ralph Recto.
Thank you, Ambassador Romualdez, to our man of the House, Speaker Ferdinand Martin Romualdez, to my former colleagues and friends in the House of Representatives, fellow workers in government, our partner banks, friends in the U.S., ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Thank you for investing your time in this dialogue. I am very eager to share with you the Philippines' promising growth story and how the United States can actively be part of this journey. Over the years, the U.S. has been our stalwart ally. It has supported us in strengthening national security and provided investments and development programs that uplifted the lives of Filipinos. There is definitely huge headroom for our economic partnership to grow more extensively over the coming years. So allow me to underscore the compelling reasons why expanding in the Philippines is the most strategic move U.S. investors can make. First, you're teaming up with the fastest growing economy in ASEAN and soon to be one of the largest economies in the world. While global prospects remain clouded with uncertainties brought by geopolitical tensions, there is one area of consensus among economists. The Philippines is set to lead growth over the next decades. Our economic numbers point in that direction. Under President Marcos Jr.'s term, the Philippines grew the fastest in the ASEAN despite external challenges, expanding by 6.6%. Multilateral organizations validate the vigor of our economy. They expect us to remain a front runner in ASEAN with a projected growth of 5.8% to 6.3% in 2024. Our own projections show that we can grow by 6 to 7% this year and even higher at 6.5 to 7.5% in 2025. International research firms also attest to our economic strength. They project the Philippines to join the ranks of the world's top 20 biggest economies by mid-century. And fast forward to 2075, Goldman Sachs forecasts the Philippines to become the 14th largest economy worldwide, outpacing France. Our optimism about reaching and even surpassing these projections is fueled by favorable factors. Our growth trajectory is being driven by strong domestic consumption. which is a robust shield against external factors contributing to the global economic slowdown. This strong consumer spending, which continues to account for more than 70% of the economy, is being supported by a vibrant labor market. The largest portion of our workforce is engaged in formal and stable work. This is an indication of a strong and growing middle class. As the Philippines heads towards becoming an upper middle income country next year, and the world's 13th largest consumer market by 2030, our domestic market offers a huge capacity for enterprises to thrive. Meanwhile, the robust remittance inflows from our overseas Filipino workers also help sustain domestic consumer demand. The strong rebound of our tourism industry, as reflected by the rising tourism receipts and the hefty BPO export revenues, gives us confidence that we have ample buffers against external headwinds. These, along with our low external debt and healthy reserves that exceed standard benchmarks, should keep our currency stable and resilient to adverse external shocks. Our growth is further bolstered by an inflation rate that is well under control. The Philippine Central Bank has remained vigilant in ensuring that inflation expectations are well anchored through monetary policy. Meanwhile, in the executive branch, we are adopting a whole-of-government approach to reduce inflationary risk brought about by geopolitical tensions. Another reason why investing in the Philippines is the best move is our commitment to ensuring business stability through prudent fiscal management. Our fiscal performance remains on solid footing and on track with our growth-enhancing fiscal consolidation plan, dubbed as the medium-term fiscal framework. In 2023, our fiscal deficit continued to narrow down to 6.2% of GDP from its peak of 8.6% at the height of the pandemic. This is projected to gradually decrease in a sustainable and strategically paced manner over the medium term. The narrowing deficit path is attributed to the consistently higher government revenue collections and improved expenditure management, which prioritizes massive infrastructure projects and social services. Meanwhile, our debt is on a sustained downward trajectory, with the majority of financing sourced internally to take advantage of high liquidity in the domestic economy. In 2023, our debt-to-GDP ratio further dropped to 60.1% from its peak of 60.9% in 2022. We are on track to bring this ratio down further to less than 60% by 2028, well below the internationally accepted threshold of 70%. Our fiscal consolidation plan ensures that the economy will continue to outgrow our debt in the medium term. The Philippines' high credit ratings summarize all our efforts in exercising fiscal discipline and prudent debt management. This is a strong vote of confidence in our sound fiscal and economic policies. Meanwhile, we have a president with decisive political leadership and a foreign policy that is friendly, independent, and peace-oriented. President Marcos Jr. has been actively engaging with leaders around the world to strengthen ties and form alliances aimed at boosting economic security, which is a key aspect of ensuring national security. In fact, he was just here last week for a trilateral meeting with U.S. President Joe Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida to enhance peace, security, and investment cooperation in the Indo-Pacific region. Under President Marcos Jr.'s guidance, the Philippine government has also rolled out a red carpet of pro-business policies to welcome investors with open arms. Private sector participation is now made faster and easier with the recent enactment of the Public-Private Partnership Code. This provides a stable, predictable, and competitive environment where high-quality PPP investments can thrive. We offer an enticing menu of investment prospects for PPPs under the President's Build Better More program, featuring 185 big-ticket infrastructure projects worth $161 billion. The Ninoy Aquino International Airport, PPP project, the administration's largest PPP endeavor to date, is a crowning testament to how quickly and efficiently the Philippine government acts on investments. We evaluated the proposal to rehabilitate our country's primary international gateway in just 6 weeks, the fastest approved PPP project in Philippine history. The private sector consortium for the project was selected seamlessly through a transparent and competitive bidding process. Rest assured, you can expect nothing less than the same speed and efficient handling of your investments when you partner with us. The Maharlika Investment Fund, our first sovereign wealth fund, also presents an ideal platform for private sector engagement in financing our flagship infrastructure projects. Meanwhile, the Philippines is now open to full foreign ownership of renewable energy projects. This will help unlock the vast potential of the country's mineral sector, valued at $6 trillion. We also now allow full foreign ownership of public services like telecommunications, airports, and shipping. And we have lowered the minimum paid-up capital requirements for foreign corporations. Furthermore, the President institutionalized green lanes for strategic investments. This is a whole-of-government approach to streamline approval and registration processes, as well as address investor concerns. On top of these, we are currently refining the country's fiscal incentives system to further tailor fit incentives and attract more international enterprises. Another critical factor that makes us more advantageous and globally competitive is our very young and well-educated population. The Philippines enjoys a demographic sweet spot with a median age population of 25 years old. This stands in stark contrast to the aging populations of our neighbors and developed countries like the U.S., whose median age is 38. This sweet spot provides an opportunity for the Philippines and the U.S. to become demographic partners. Our young, tech-savvy, English-speaking workforce certainly complements the U.S. forward-thinking businesses. And as we rapidly invest in Philippine or in physical infrastructure, we equally prioritize the development of our human capital. Our law ensures free basic education for all Filipinos, and we have extended this privilege to students enrolled in state colleges and universities. This will ensure that our workforce is among the best and the brightest in the world. And while we rank as the best performing economy in ASEAN, growth is not the final goal of all our efforts. We seek a more dynamic and competitive economy to cut the poverty rate to a single digit or 9% by 2028. This means lifting 14 million Filipinos out of poverty. The reward for all our hard work is to create more opportunities to provide a comfortable life for every Filipino. With this, we eagerly look forward to the U.S. becoming a key player in realizing our development goals by strengthening our long-standing alliance with more forward-looking business partnerships. I invite all of you to join us in building an economy that will allow Filipino people's many talents to blossom and secure a better future for our children. Thank you. Mabuhay po ang Pilipinas.
Thank you very much, Secretary Recto. At this point, we'd like to begin our next part of the program with panel discussion. Our distinguished panelists will tackle the Philippines' macroeconomic landscape and growth story, as well as discuss key reforms being pursued to promote the ease of doing business and to attract more foreign investment. We'll also discuss the availability of investment opportunities in priority sectors, including infrastructure, mining, semiconductors, microelectronics, agriculture, steel, and pharmaceuticals. Let me now call on our panelists to join me and Secretary Recto on the stage. Department of Budget and Management Secretary Amina Pangadanman, National Economic and Development Authority Secretary Arsenio M. Balascan, BSP Deputy Governor Francisco Daquila, and also we'll be joined by Chairman of HSBC's Public Sector Banking, Global Banking and Markets, Mr. Michael Ellum. Please join me on stage. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Looking forward to the panel discussion, but let me get the ball rolling by addressing my first question to BSP Deputy Governor Daquila. BSP is an inflation and targeting central bank. It monitors risks to inflation. What do you consider as the factors that should signal the easing of monetary policy? We would also like to know your views on the direction and pace of the Fed's policy in 2024 and its impact on BSP's monetary policy making. And finally, is there a possibility for BSP to cut rates before the Fed, given the 25 basis point off-cycle cut back in October?
Thank you for the questions. I'd like to give a little background on inflation developments, just so we can have a picture of what lies behind the Monetary Board's recent decisions. So in March, we saw inflation picking up to 3.7%, and that's attributable to supply side shocks. Actually, from food, we have an increase in rice prices, and that's something that we're monitoring closely. In terms of non-food inflation, again, there was an increase of oil-related products. This is something that we have anticipated, and we're actually seeing that inflation can go beyond the target range of 2 to 4% in the second quarter of this year before reverting back to within target in the second half. So the baseline forecast is at about 3.8% inflation this year. That would be within target, but the board noted that the risks to inflation dominate on the upside. So if we include the impact of these risks, inflation can go up to at about 4% for this year before moderating back to within target in the baseline at about 3.2% for next year. But should there be still risks materializing, inflation can still be at around 3.5% for next year. But that, in both cases, inflation will be back to within the target range. So in that situation, the board deemed it appropriate to keep the monetary policy stance, maintain the policy rate at 6.5%. And I would say that the board will look for a situation where inflation is comfortably on a path that is consistent with target before there would be an adjustment in the policy rate. In the interviews with the governor, he has cited several possible scenarios with the central scenario being possibly in the fourth quarter of this year, there can be an adjustment. But again, depending on the latest outturns, beta, that can be, that can go to the to Q1 of next year, or should the inflation go be more favorable, it can be advanced a little bit. The Fed's actions have been taken into account in coming up with those scenarios. But as you can see, the developments are quite fast-paced. So with the latest outturns indicating that the Fed may be more conservative in its monetary policy, I'm sure that that will be taken by the board into account in the next decision on the monetary policy stance.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Governor. I'm sure we'll have more questions from the audience and others on monetary policy a little bit later. But what I'd like to do now is turn to NIDA Secretary Balasakan. Last year, the Philippines' GDP growth was 5.6%, which came out a little bit less than the government target. What do you consider the upside and downside risks or pressures on the 6-7 growth target for 2024? And also, what are the main priorities to improve growth in the near term? And finally, what are the key factors that will ensure sustained economic growth momentum in the longer term?
Thank you. Yeah. The economic growth last year was 25.5. There is a little bit of reduction after looking at the final numbers. But for this year, we are expecting 6-7%, already taking into account the kind of risk that BSP has mentioned, and also in the earlier presentations of Sec Ralph. We have the upsides are that we are expecting the external increases in food prices to moderate this year, especially at the middle of the year when El Nino phenomenon and some of the elections related restrictions in the food supply globally are expected to also and so the expectations are that global food prices are expected to come down toward the second half of the year, and that's great for us because a lot of the inflation in recent months were coming from the food sector, and those were largely external in nature. So that is a positive thing for the economy. The other one is that the slowdown last year was also influenced by the kind of absorptive capacity problems we had. We were able to address those issues in the second latter part of the year, and we are using that lessons to further streamline the processes and expect that to fuel growth, and that can be elaborated later by my colleague Sec Mina. I think that the slowdown in the inflation last year and continuing this year is expected to fuel consumption growth, as you know, and as you have seen in the presentation earlier, almost 3/4 of the growth of the economy, of the GDP, is actually coming from the consumption side. So the lower inflation expectations expected in the coming months, and as we try to adjust the address the concerns on the supply side bottlenecks, I think we should see that consumption, domestic consumption, to strengthen. Investment, I think the moderate investment growth in last year was also partly an effect of the interest upticks in response to the high inflation last year. And as you know, the effects or the impact of high interest rates could last for 5 quarters, and so we are feeling the investors are feeling the as well as consumers is feeling the high interest rates in the past till the end of this year, but with the expectation that there are no further increases, and the likelihood that that will happen is better than last year. I think that investment will also come back at a stronger pace this year. Now, of course, the downside are geopolitical and trade tensions. Mm-hmm. And we hope that that will not, especially in the Middle East, we hope that will not cripple again the logistics and supply chain globally, that could impact on the economy. Now, with respect to growth strategies, the attention is for us now is to ensure that there are no delays in the implementation of these huge projects, many projects in the IFPs. Sec Ralph showed, despite the challenges in the fiscal front, we are not going to slow down with our infrastructure build-up. We are spending 5 to 6% of our GDP for infrastructure, and we are also ramping up the. On top of that, the private sector is incentivized through the implementation of the various investment regimes, particularly our public-private partnership code, and we expect this to complement the public sector investments. We expect to see, I think, a more robust agricultural sector. We were so challenged by the performance of that sector in last year, and we do expect that this year we'll be able to get the food supply problems moderating and solve so that the constraints on growth coming from that sector will be much reduced. So I can stop from there, and you can elaborate on some of the other issues so that we don't consume too much time. Thank you.
Okay, I do have a very quick follow-up question. You did mention El Nino. Well, how important has that been, and how important do you think it will be, or has it? How much has the impact been?
Well, on a positive note, the El Nino hit us this year was not as bad as we initially expected, because we're preparing for the kind of El Nino that happened in 1997, that accompanied the Asian crisis, and there was another one that accompanied or was followed by the global Asian crisis in 2009, and this time around, I think that partly because of that proactive measures that the government put in place to ensure that the impact is as moderate as possible, I think that worked out, and so the reduction in food output. In agricultural output, as well as the other ramifications of El Nino and other sectors of society, like on the health and others, I think we're quite moderate.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mr. Secretary. Secretary Mina, a question for you. What are the main features of the national budget, and how does it support the growth strategy going forward, both this year and in the future? And then what are the spending priorities for the budget for next year, as in fiscal year 2025?
Thank you. Good morning to everyone. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Well, on the part of the budget department, of course, we're here to support our economic growth. Just to point, our budget for this year is 103 billion US dollars. It's 5.768 trillion pesos, a 9.5% increase from last year's budget. And consistent with our medium-term fiscal framework, it is above a little over 20% of our gross domestic product from now until 2028. Yes, we are preparing our 2025 budget now. We're undergoing budget preparations. Agencies are doing their budgets now, and it will be submitted to us in a few weeks. But of course, again, consistent with our Philippine Development Plan, our medium-term fiscal framework, our budget will prioritize social sector. It will contribute to about 38% of the national budget. On top there is education, which is mandated in our constitution to be the top priority, the highest budgetary for the budget. Next is health, because we want to have generally it's human capital development, because we have we need to have a productive and a healthy society. It is one of our greatest resource, as mentioned by Secretary Recto, with median age of about 25 years old. And we will continue to provide social protection to those who are marginalized. Next is infrastructure development, both hard and soft infrastructure. For this year, it's about 5.5% of our total of our GDP. We plan to do it until 2028, up to 6%. It also includes our investment for digitalization, which has been increasing for the couple of years now. It has been increasing for about more than 50%. This is also to provide for to answer the ease of doing business and to work on digitalization efforts of the national government. And also on agriculture side, we have been for the past administrations, I think there's been a neglect on investment in agriculture. That's why from last year we increased our budget for agriculture in double digits. Maybe I'll just stop there and then I'll just add later.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Secretary Mina. I'd like to turn to the private sector now. HSBC, Michael, I'd like to get your perspective on what excites you about investing in the Philippines, and also share your views, your perspective on what's going on in the Philippines economy.
Thank you very much, Michael. And let me just say it's a great privilege to be here once again at the Philippine Dialogue here in Washington, and to be able to participate to the discussion. I think there's a lot to be excited about in relation to the Philippines, and we've heard a lot of that already. I think the way that we would look at these issues at HSBC would be perhaps to start by stepping back a little bit and thinking about what are the major trends in the global economy and how do they then impact specific economies, an economy like the Philippines. And I think we would really identify three major trends. One is obviously the shift of economic gravity from east to west. And I think within that, the significant growth we have seen and are expected to see in intra-Asian trade in particular. Currently, we estimate intra-Asian trade to be around $4 trillion, and we expect that to rise to around $7 trillion by 2030. And clearly, as in the ASEAN region, will be major beneficiaries of that, and the Philippines within that is very well positioned. I think the second major trend that we see is what you might call as not deglobalization, but reglobalization. So I think the reshaping of global trade and investment flows and supply chains, and again, for reasons maybe we can go into, I'm sure we will go into in more detail a bit later, the Philippines, I think, is very well placed to take advantage of that. And I think the third major trend is obviously the transition that all economies are having to go through to deliver on their net zero climate transition objectives. And again, this is an area where the Philippines has a very strong story to tell. So I think the fact that there are these very strong headwinds for the Philippines in relation to what's happening more broadly in the global economy leaves it very well position. Now, we've heard a lot about this morning about some of the strong fundamentals in the Philippines, and don't very much share, I think, much of that analysis. The very clear, decisive, and successful economic reform agenda that is being undertaken. I think the one thing, though, if I were to single one thing out, I think it would be the fact that it's really been the performance of the Philippine economy through what has actually been quite a challenging time. I think we should, you know, we should acknowledge that inflation was high in the Philippines. It was the highest rate of inflation in ASEAN, I think, last year. And as a consequence, monetary policy was tightened, I think, probably more than any other ASEAN economy. But despite that, I think it's come out, as we heard earlier, as the fastest growing economy in ASEAN last year and the lowest unemployment rate. So I think the test really of an economy is not so much how it performs in a good times, but how it deals with some of the big challenges. And I think the proof that we've seen recently of the resilience and the underlying strength of the Philippines economy is, I think, certainly leaves us very excited about how well positioned it is to take advantage of some of these bigger trends that we're seeing in the global economy.
Thanks, Michael. Very interesting. Finally, I'd like to turn to Secretary Recto. President Marcos has mentioned that the administration will focus on implementing policies to galvanize foreign investment, specifically, quote, and I quote, to generate a broadly beneficial investment boom in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of reforms that have been passed, but what do you see are there still bottlenecks? And if there are, what is the plan to reduce those or break those up?
First and foremost, the most important is the ease of doing business and reducing the cost of doing business. So that is the instructions of the president. The ease of doing business is the most important, I suppose, because many want to invest in the Philippines. They want it to be a little more predictable. And essentially, it talks about the permitting process. Mm-hmm. We also do have a new secretary involved in that as well. So these are the only bottlenecks that we see. But there is a lot of interest in investing in the Philippines. Last year, there was about $9 billion worth of investments. In the Board of Investments, there's roughly about $900 billion worth of investments in the BOI today. We are reducing the cost of doing business by passing the Create More. To make it simpler for business to locate in the Philippines and reducing their cost. Essentially, that's what we're doing right now.